However, it was also a chill of fear, deliciously uncommon in itself, at the notion of an orc that could comprehend and respond using language. It barely mattered that the language in question was a primitive one. The sheer possibility of communication with this species felt like a gulf had opened up beneath her. The galaxy, or her understanding of it, had changed, and change sat ill with a culture that had existed in the same way for tens of millennia. "Do you have a name, creature?" she asked, fascinated and appalled at the same time. In response, the orc coughed out a collection of aggressive-sounding syllables. Then it grinned at her, showing a mouth full of massive ivory fangs, and spoke again.
"In the Sumi language, you'd call me Uftak Blackhawk."
The name was barely any smoother when rendered into Mon-Ki sounds, but at least it was vaguely intelligible. Dimera stored it away for reference. Anything she could learn about this brute and its kin might be of use in ensuring her victory.
"I know you," the orc said unprompted.
Its brow was furrowed in concentration.
"You're the spiky boss what made like you wanted to fight, but just danced around a lot."
Dimera bristled, but she had little comeback. She'd not even managed to land a blow on the monster, and it was only thanks to her own immense skill and agility that it had failed in its own attempts.
"It took out Uzgit and his lads well enough," the orc said. "That was some good scragging."
Dimera blinked. Had the thing just complimented her?
"So,"
the orc said, looking around its cell as though seeing it for the first time.
"I ain't dead. Guess you gits have got a plan."
"You will be placed into the arena this evening," Dimera said. "There you will be matched against the deadliest opponents and the most dangerous beasts that Kamara has to offer until you die." She smiled at the thought, until she realized that the orc was smiling back at her.
"Sounds good to me."
"Good?" Dimera folded her arms. "Did you not understand me, you witless brute? This is a death sentence for you."
"Gonna die at some point,"
the orc replied with a shrug.
"Might be today, might be tomorrow, might be when the sun blows up and fries everything. So long as it's violent or funny, I ain't bothered."
Dimera was rendered speechless for a few moments. It was one thing to scoff at the orc's disdain for casualties, to assume that they were mindless beasts that had no concept of mortality. It was quite another to be smacked in the face with the realization that they understood it and simply didn't care. Every aspect, every single facet of Drukhari society was concentrated on extending one's lifespan for as long as possible. They sheltered in the webway to avoid the attention of she who thirsts. They nourished their souls with the suffering of others in order to stave off their own deaths. Nobles such as herself devoted great swathes of their wealth to their own protection, in the certain knowledge that others of her own kind desperately wanted her dead, simply so they could seize the resources she controlled and use them to lengthen their own lives that bit further. The notion that orcs didn't fear death, that there was no lurking, malicious entity that they knew of, waiting to torture them for all eternity in the darkness that lay beyond their final breath. Why should this species of barbarians enjoy such luxury? Why should they be so carefree? How could they have such life, such vitality, and still seek to squander it amidst the thunder of guns? For the briefest of moments, Dimera had a vision of something else. A life in which the shadow of she who thirsts did not cast a subtle blight on every waking moment and trail its fingers through her dreams. A life in which she did not have to cling desperately to her own existence by torturing other beings, lest she suffer far more hideous torments when the spark of her own soul sputtered out. A life in which she could just live. It made her furious. You are savages, she hissed. Do you even know why you fight?
Yeah,
Uftak said.
Do you know why you do?
Thymira frowned. What?
Orcs always fight,
the massive creature rumbled.
Always have. It's what we was made for, but it ain't just that. It's what the gods want, but it ain't just that. See, the more we fight, the bigger we get.
It tapped itself on the chest with one massive finger.
The bigger we get, the smarter we get.
It tapped itself on the side of the head.
And the smarter we get, the better we get at fighting. If we don't fight, we get slow and stupid, and then we might forget about the gods. We might forget about teleporters and gargants and boomdacker snazwagons.
You're just making words up now, Thymira broke in angrily, then took a step back as the orc lashed out with a punch. It passed between the bars and struck the force field, which held with a crackling boom of energy. But the thing's arms were long enough that it would have reached her had that protection not been there.
I was talking,
the orc growled, and the hairs on the back of Dimera's neck stood up as the subsonic harmonics of the creature's voice shivered through her bones.
I've seen you lot fight, Uftak continued. Don't know why you do it. You don't enjoy it.
We do, Dimera snapped, but the orc waved her words away.
Nah, you enjoy killing. You enjoy showing off. Proving that you're better than the other gits and making sure they realise it. But you don't enjoy fighting. How are you going to enjoy fighting when you can't take a punch?
It held up one arm.
One of your mates cut this hand off once. I had to get a new one off some git what probably didn't deserve to have two of his own. And there was one time before that, when me whole body got blown out from under me head. That was a good laugh. That's how you can tell it's a good fight. But you spikies would just sneak up behind gits and stab them in the back like a bunch of blood axes.
You seem particularly sure of your own delusions, Dimera scoffed. And I do not incidentally know what a blood axe is, nor do I wish to learn. But tell me something, creature. If you are so intelligent and you know us so well, why was it so easy for Zuzuli's underlings to capture you?
Weren't this smart before, Uftak said. I was getting there, but I weren't this smart. Then that git stabbed me with the grow juice, and when I woke up, everything was smaller than what it was. And me brain was bigger.
And much good may it do you, Dimera said, affecting a gaiety that she did not entirely feel. This orc, this serious, calculating orc that accepted its imprisonment, but which she could tell was ever alert for any sign of weakness or opportunity, had rattled her. I trust you realise that your army is even now going to be tearing itself apart as your subordinates try to elevate themselves to your former position.
The strongest will win,
Uftak said with another shrug.
That's the way of it. The war will get started again, and they'll come for you like we was doing anyway. Especially since I'm the only one what knows how to get them out of here,
he added slyly. Dimera regarded it carefully. You're what?
I know how the portals work,
Uftak said carelessly, leaning on the bars of its cell with one hand and inspecting the fingers of the other.
Gotta have one of you gits around, usually. Mind you, I managed to force that one what got us through into this bit of wherever the Zog we actually are. Just needed a bit of thinking from me and a powerful urge from the lads to kick all of your teeth in.
Dimera bit her lip. The orc's ploy was blatant, especially to one such as she, who had been steeped in the Byzantine power plays of Camorra's high society since before she could walk. It was angling for her to release it, and dangling the prospect of it leading its army away as the reward for her cooperation. Fine, she could play along, if only to demonstrate to it how superior her intellect was, no matter how large a brain it had now. But why would you get them out of here? She asked, innocently. After all you wish to do is fight, and you still have plenty of enemies here. Uftak didn't reply for a few seconds. It just looked at her, its head tilted slightly to one side. Then it grunted and spoke.
Are you the boss?
What?
The boss. In charge,
Uftak elaborated, as though she had somehow not comprehended the meaning of the words, as opposed to why it was asking.
Do the other spikies do what you say?
Yes, Dimera said firmly. Uftak leaned closer to the bars.
All of them. There's not a single spiky what tells you what to do.
An image of Azdrubal Vect flashed unbidden into Dimera's mind. Only an image, for she had never been privileged enough to lay eyes on the living muse, but his cold, cruel visage was burned into her memory from hologlyphs and statuary. She wanted to lie because it burned her to admit weakness in front of this brute, but the tiny tendrils of worry that the overlord of the Dark City would hear of even this tiny disobedience had already taken root in her brain and brought forth their fruit in the form of all the painful, terrible ways his displeasure would make itself known.
Yeah, fought not,
Uftak said with a deep chuckle when she didn't answer immediately.
You're a boss, but you're not the real boss.
It stood back again.
And that's the same as me.
Dimera raised her eyebrows. You are not in charge of this rabble.
This lot? Oh, yeah, the orc said. But that's just a part of the Tekwa, see? The rest of them are out there somewhere, led by the Mech Lord, the biggest Big Mech. He's been giving the orders for as long as I've been in the war. And, to be honest,
it continued conspiratorially,
I'm getting a bit sick of it. I could stay here and keep stomping you gits. Make a little empire of me own in your backyard. But that ain't really satisfying. We've had a good scrap. Now I want to get back out there and have a word with the Mech Lord about who should really be in charge.
It grinned again, and Dimera realised it was waiting for her response. The void-cursed thing actually thought it had appealed to her through some sense of kinship, of shared struggle, and was waiting for her to release it. It would be disappointed. The more you fight, the bigger you get, and the smarter you get, she said, as if musing. And you have no fear of the arena since you are unconcerned by a violent death, nor indeed when your life ends, so long as you consider that end to be a worthwhile one. So, what would happen, she added, approaching right up to the force field that separated her from the monstrous beast, if you were to just stay there? Uftak blinked.
What?
No arena, no death, no mobs of your own kind, and certainly no fighting, Dimera said. Just those four walls with everything else out of reach. I wonder how long it would take you to degenerate if your body does not get whatever hormonal stimulus violence evidently releases within its cells. Will you shrink? Will you lose the intelligence that allows you to converse with me? Will you eventually lose even the memory of your own gods? Not that you would be of much interest to them by the sounds of it if you remained cooped up in a cell without the ability to engage in combat of any sort. Very slowly, with an audible creaking of flesh and popping of joints. Uftak's massive hands clenched into fists.
"It will be fascinating to observe," Dimera said lightly. "And observe it I shall, because no matter how long you continue to draw breath, I will be here. The army that was once yours might make us bleed before they die, but they will die, and they will never reach here or find you. No one will rescue you. No one will even kill you. I will take great pleasure in watching you wither, in the process losing every semblance of self that a beast like you can claim to have. You see, while you need to fight, all my people require to survive is the suffering of others. Normally, we inflict that through physical pain, but with such a naturally resilient wretch as yourself," she said with a smile, "I am intrigued to see whether your growing despair will suffice."
"See, I thought we might have had some sort of agreement coming along," Uftak growled. "I thought you might be smart. Turns out you're just as stupid as every other weedy little scrawny what thinks they know how things are gonna go. How's that been working out for you so far? Have the orcs been doing everything you thought he would and nothing else?"
Dimera refused to be browbeaten by this towering wretch. She kept her superior smile on her face and stepped backwards from the cage, then turned and began to walk away.
"Fighting should be fun,"
Uftak continued to rumble from behind her.
"You lot can't even get that right with your knives, and you look at me, I'm the best nonsense. If you were a proper fighter, you and me would be scrapping right now."
Dimera continued to walk away, and the monstrous orc began shouting louder and louder behind her, until its voice filled the entire dungeon like thunder.
"All right then, Spikey. You gotta know I'm gonna get out of here, and one way or another, I'm gonna find ya, and I won't be fighting for fun. I'm gonna make you suffer. You hear me, Spikey? I'm gonna make you suffer."
Chapter 20. The boss is gone. The words ran through the wire faster than buggy fuel through a grot's digestive system. The boss is gone. It wasn't always even actual words, or at least not those actual words. It was a sense, a feeling, some form of innate knowledge that spread from one orc to another without the individual vectors being conscious of it. One moment the orc knew what they were doing and why, and the next there was a splinter of uncertainty worming its way inwards. Without a big boss, who was in charge? If two knobs were arguing over something, who was going to set them straight and tell them what the truth was? Something didn't have to be factual to be the truth, not yet. Truth was whatever orcs told the galaxy it was. Whatever the orc in charge said the truth was then became the truth, and then the wire would set itself towards making sure the galaxy reflected the truth. Now the truth was the boss is gone, and that meant that all other truth was briefly suspended until a new boss was found. Of course, various orcs had their own ideas about the truth of who the new boss was going to be. Various orcs and one grot. Snaggy was aware of the change before any of his followers were. He'd experienced it before, although he'd had the advantage at that point of being the one who caused the Gargant Head to fall on top of the war boss in question, so the state of affairs had been pretty obvious. However, he recognised the way the air prickled as new tensions began to flow out through the assembled orcs around them.
He adopted a suitably heroic stance. Feet apart, fists on his hips and head tilted back slightly, then closed his eyes ostentatiously. When he was sure that enough of his followers would have noticed, and just before any runt herds nearby started to twig that something odd was going on, he opened his eyes again and gasped theatrically.
The big boss has gone!
The heads of the grots around him whipped around until he was the centre of a crowd of wide eyes and attentive ears.
The gods told me, Snaggy announced.
It wasn't difficult to sound both shocked and excited, given that was exactly how he felt. What in the name of the Great Green had the Spikies pulled out that had allowed them to off Uftak Blackhawk? More importantly, how could Snaggy Littletooth, prophet of Gulk and Mulk and the first ever grot boss, turn this situation to his advantage? One thing was for sure, dallying wasn't going to achieve anything.
This is our chance, lads, he announced. Who's the obvious choice to replace Uftak?
The assembled grots looked at each other and came up with a variation of mumbles on a general theme of uncertainty.
Exactly, Snaggy said with glee. There ain't one. That means confusion, and confusion is something we can use. The Orc War Machine can't function without us, so this is our chance. Nick stuff, hide stuff and break stuff. By the time the Orcs have worked out who they think is in charge, the war ain't going to be going anywhere. If they want the vehicles to go or the guns to shoot, he continued proudly, they're going to have to come begging to us. Begging.
Boss?
Nib asked, tentatively raising a hand. Snaggy hated it when Grotz did that, since it usually meant they were either slowing his momentum with a ridiculous question, or, more rarely but more frustratingly, had come up with what they thought was a logical hole in his argument that he would momentarily and inexplicably be unable to answer, despite the obvious difference in intelligence between them and him.
Yes, Nib,
he said, warily.
Why wouldn't the Orcs just dump us for wrecking everything?
Nib asked.
I mean, they're going to be pretty mad. Maybe, maybe, Snaggy said. But you got to remember that there's going to be a zogging big scrap while they work out who's in charge, and that ain't a fight for Grotz. What Orc's going to say he should be in charge because Grotz won the fight for him? None of them. So what I'm saying is, he continued, there's going to be a lot less Orcs in a while, but the same amount of us as there is now. So maybe they're going to have to listen to us for a change.
If there's going to be a lot less Orcs, what's going to stop the Spikies from scragging us?
Another grot asked, in the nervous tones of one who had seen a bit of scragging as performed by Spikies and had already decided that he wanted no part of any such thing.
You gotta stop thinking that the Orcs are gonna protect you,
Snaggy barked, stepping forward and slapping the other grot around the face.
It's a shame of it. Ain't you worked it out yet? The only thing we're good for, so far as an Orc thinks, is dying in whatever way they choose. You can bet your last tooth that'll mean getting shot by the Spikies' poison needles or something just as bad. What you got to lose?
Well, all me innards, for starters.
Look, if freedom and glory was going to be won through cowardice and petty thieving, then Grotz would already have it,
Snaggy said, turning in a circle to address his audience.
We gotta think bigger. We gotta take risks. We need to be the ones in charge of all the best stuff. So get out there and seize the means of destruction.
You heard the boss,
Gip shouted, leaning into his role as Snaggy's right-hand grot and General Heavy.
Get to it! And sharpish,
Snaggy added, as movement caught his eye.
There's a runt herd coming!
The crowd of grots scattered like a gathering of corpse squigs exposed to the light by a body being turned over. A sight many of them were familiar with, since the dead often had things worth nicking but rarely fought back, unless it was a very bad day.
and Snaggy went with them, for there was no sense blowing his cover by being found making inflammatory speeches. He hastened along through the gradually increasing chaos of the Orc army, cursing his natural aura of greatness, which drew distrustful Orcs towards him. He didn't want to be average, but it would be useful for others to sometimes perceive him as average, rather than the smart, charismatic leader of exceptional grace.
Oof! Oof!
Snaggy fell in a tangle of limbs, not all of them his own. He feared for a moment that he'd collided with an Orc, but he knew that was wrong even before he'd managed to thrash himself free. The force of the impact and the pitch of the clumsy git's grunt led to one conclusion, another grot. In fact, it led to one specific conclusion.
Nisquick, he said, picking himself up. Snaggy,
Nisquick yelled, lurching back to his own feet.
You gotta come quick. They've taken the boss.
They've taken the boss,
Snaggy said, frowning.
Who's taken him?
The Spikies,
Nisquick wailed, as though that should be obvious.
They came with their sky gits and shot him full of darts, but then they grabbed him and flew off. He dropped the snazhammer and everything. The boss has been captured, and no one knows what to do.
Snaggy hesitated. On the one hand, Uftak out of the way was still Uftak out of the way. It would likely lead to strife within the war, and exactly the sort of confusion he was banking on to make his grab for power. On the other hand, Uftak out of the way was a very different proposition to Uftak being dead. The big old git was likely to take some killing anyway, and Doc Drosfang had by all accounts saved him when he should have been a goner once before. But Snaggy would have been prepared to take his chances on even an 80% or so likelihood of Uftak actually having carked it. An Uftak who'd only been captured, though, that was a problem. It was a very low chance of him actually being dead, since the Spikies probably thought they could have some fun with him, and given his stubbornness and general ingenuity, quite a high chance of him somehow finding his way back to the war. Snaggy was a visionary, but he was a realistic one. Seizing control from Uftak Blackhawk, an established and massive big boss, was going to be a long shot. That was why he hadn't tried it yet. Seizing control from a newly minted successor was far more achievable, albeit still risky. Going to all the trouble to seize control from said newly minted successor, but with the very real chance of Uftak returning and being very displeased with what he found, that, to Snaggy, seemed like a poor use of his time and energy.
So, why'd you come looking for me?
He asked, which seemed to be the logical next question, at least while he figured out how to ditch Nisquick.
You're the smartest grot I know,
Nisquick wailed.
None of the Orcs have got any ideas about how to find a boss. They're just all standing around arguing.
Of course they are,
Snaggy chuckled, thoroughly tickled by the mental image conjured by Nisquick's words.
Of course they are. I bet none of them even thought about tracking the signal from the hammer, eh?
Nisquick's eyebrows squeezed up close together in an external representation of his two brain cells trying to fire a few neurons and work out what Snaggy meant.
The signal from the hammer?
Yeah,
Snaggy said, still laughing at the thought of how much smarter he was than all the other Orcs.
I used to work for a mech boy, you know. The boffin modified the snazhammer, so the boss can teleport it back to him. But in order for that to work, the hammer and the boss's wrist armour have got to know where the other one is, right? So there's got to be a signal between them. If you hooked up a gizmo to the hammer, then you could work out what direction the boss is in and follow it right to him.
He laughed and slapped Nisquick on the back.
That's the problem with Orcs. They ain't got the brains. Snaggy,
Nisquick breathed.
You're a genius.
Yeah, I know, Snaggy said modestly, then frowned as Nisquick turned and began to sprint away.
Oi, where you going?
Realisation struck with the speed and force of a squiggoth's kick and left Snaggy breathless. He'd been tricked. He'd been betrayed. Not only had Nisquick shamelessly unearthed the crucial information that only Snaggy's wisdom could have known, the little git was now going to claim it as his own too. Well, the buzzer squigs were out of the jar now, no mistake. One way or another, the orcs of the Tekwa were going to find out how to track down their missing big boss, and so scupper Snaggy's best chance of overthrowing the unjust power structures and becoming the Grot boss in truth. Only one question remained. Was he going to let Nisquick take the credit and complete Snaggy's humiliation? Or was he going to salvage what he could from his fellow Grot's treachery and at least trick Uftek into thinking that he was loyal when the big boss was retrieved in order to get the brute to lower his guard for some as-yet-unformulated scheme in the future? There was only one answer to that question.
Get back here, you little toe-rag!
Snaggy bellowed, and set off in pursuit of Nisquick's rapidly receding form. Chapter 21. Uftak was angry. He was angry because the spike had sassed him, and he was angry because, despite being angry, he hadn't been able to grab it and rip it apart. He was angry because he knew that the Spikey knew that and had sassed him not just to make him angry, but to make him angry because he couldn't get to it. It had knowingly made him angry with his own anger, and that just made him even angrier. However, as the immediate anger began to cool slightly, Uftak noticed a different feeling. It was an unfamiliar one. A sort of hollow in the middle of him, a bit like being hungry, but without any notion that eating something would make it go away. He'd never really experienced anything like it before, although, on the other hand, he'd also never experienced anything like being trapped in a small metal cage with no prospect of anything to fight or any way to get out. He'd hammered on the walls and the force field beyond the bars, but even his impressively large new frame had been unable to make much more than a dent. He considered the possibility that this was a specific emotion relating solely to being trapped in a small metal cage with no prospect of anything to fight or any way to get out, but he had a nasty feeling that it was the despair the Spikey had talked about. It was not a concept with which Uftak was familiar, because there were very few situations in a normal orc's life where it would apply. You were either fighting, or you were doing the things that you did between fights, like eating or sleeping, or repairing the weapons you used to fight, or travelling to find a fight, or so on. If you didn't find a fight, you could always punch the orc next to you and start one. Your knob didn't always like that, but then you might end up fighting the knob, which was still a fight, so the basic goal had been achieved. The point was that orcs lived in the moment, and those moments were often violent, which suited them fine. You found fights, you had fights, and then you were either looking for the next fight or you were dead, which wasn't ideal since it meant no more fights, but at least showed that you'd really put your all into the last one. The notion of no fights and not being able to find a fight, not even having another orc next to you to punch. Uftak didn't understand Spikies, and was fairly sure he didn't want to either, since he'd probably have to tie his brain into knots to do it. But the Spiky boss had seemed to be telling the truth when she said that they needed others to suffer. It certainly explained a lot about why they did some of the weird things they did, although it opened up a bunch of other questions that he was equally fairly sure he didn't want to dwell on, thinking had its limits after all. An orc would never consider having a giant enemy on hand and not fighting them. But if a Spikey thought that the captive would enjoy the fight, might they not keep them caged up instead? It was vicious and weird, and therefore fitted in with everything Uftak knew about the Gits. Still, scrawnies of all flavours had a tendency to think they were smarter than they actually were, which left them open to making mistakes. He thumped the wall once more, to no obvious effect, then glared across the dark corridor at the cell facing him on the other side. There was something in there, although he couldn't make out exactly what.
Oi,
he shouted, using the Humi language.
You got any ideas for how to get out of this place?
There was a dry, slithering sound, as of scaled coils shifting against each other, and then dark, viscous liquid splattered against the opposite cell's corresponding force field. It began to drip downwards, smoking as it did so.
Guess that's a no,
Uftak muttered, and sat down to wait for whatever opportunity might present itself. The passage of time was hard to mark in the spiky city anyway, let alone in the windowless depths of wherever Uftak was. However, he had been waiting long enough to grow actually properly hungry when the next development occurred. That development being that the floor gave way beneath him and dropped him into a shaft.
What is auger?
He bellowed in surprise as he fell, bouncing off the walls as he did so with clatters and bangs when his armour plates made contact. He reached out, spreading his arms and legs, and managed to brace himself. The palms of his hands grew unpleasantly warm in the process, but he'd experienced far worse, and he came to a halt, spread-eagled above an ongoing drop that the dim light from his cell above failed to penetrate. Uftak considered for a moment. He might, with an enormous amount of effort, be able to climb back up to his cell, but what would be the point of that? He didn't want to be in his cell. It was quite possibly the worst place for him to be. Unless the Spikies had some equivalent of a rogue mech boy pulling levers for the fun of it, which, granted, wasn't out of the question. Being dropped down a chute was actually an improvement. It suggested that someone wanted him somewhere for something, and there was a good chance that would either be a fight or he could make it into one.
Here goes nothing,
Uftak muttered, and let go. Whatever other fancy tricks the Spikies might be able to play with gravity, they weren't doing it here. He plummeted downwards and was just starting to consider the likely consequence of his new and greater weight impacting on a flat surface after a fall from this height, a consequence for which words like splatter might be appropriate, when the shaft began to curve and his fall turned into a fast and somewhat uncomfortable slide. He had time enough to see slits of light ahead of him. A grate of some sort. Before his feet hit it, it gave way, and he was through. And falling again. The drop was only about that of his own height this time, and he landed in dust and a cacophony of noise with nothing bruised other than his pride. He sprang back up to his feet. His new bulk didn't seem to have slowed him down at any rate, and took stock of his surroundings. First of all, the exit through which he had just slid was already sealing itself shut again. It was set in a wall that rose considerably higher than his head and ran off as far as his eye could see on either side of him. And above it, Spikies. Lots and lots and lots of Spikies. There were far more of the gits than he could count, and Uftak found that he could count quite high now. They were mainly seated, although here and there was one jumping up or moving about, or two or more pressed up against each other in a manner that suggested they were completely oblivious to their surroundings. A lot of them were looking at him, and a lot of them were shouting. It didn't sound like a war cry. It sounded like a thin, weedy version of the roar that orcs might make when watching a race between the speed freaks. Somewhat distrustfully, Uftak turned away from the wall of shouting Spikies and looked behind him. It was war, only different. Far above him, Spikies tore through the sky on their flying war bikes, engaged in combat with other Spikies on floaty planks, as each group slalomed through poles and narrow towers that rose up from the arena floor. Uftak saw a hail of glittering shards pierce the body of one of the plank riders, which lost control of its ride and began to fall a long distance to the ground as a limp shape trailing blood. The biker that had made the kill pumped the air with its fist in celebration as the noise of the crowd swelled, but clearly forgot to keep paying attention. It flew into something that Uftek could barely make out as more than a few faint shimmering lines strung between towers, and then both it and the bike it was riding on came apart into several pieces, as neatly as if they'd been chopped by a giant invisible cleaver. Off to Uftak's right, a massive two-legged reptilian roared. It was larger than many a squiggoth, with an enormous, sharp-toothed head balanced out by a long tail and powerful hind legs on which it moved with surprising speed and surety as it ran down the tiny figures around it. Uftak grunted as he recognised them as scrawnies. Even thinner than usual, clad in rags and with only rough stubble where many of their kind boasted long, flowing hair. Prisoners or slaves, then, or some other group that had fallen foul of whichever boss was running this. They had very unspiky weapons, little more than sharpened poles. There was no evidence of poisoned darts or the sort of bitterly sharp blades that were the spiky's usual hallmark, and also no evidence that the crude tools they did have were serving as any sort of deterrent to the predator. Far to Uftak's left, a more even sort of battle was taking place. The ground looked to have been laid out especially for the purpose, with pools of glistening blue water, bulbous trunk trees, and strangely smooth white walls. A ragged group of humies were exchanging weapons fire, mainly their light zapper guns and their tiny chattering shooters, with a group of blue-skinned fish boys. There were fewer of the fish boys, but Uftak reckoned they had a good chance. Everyone knew they couldn't fight worth a damn once you got up close, but their guns were the business. The humies were hanging back, unwilling to risk the small area of open ground between them and their enemies, but Uftak could instantly tell that was a mistake. His analysis was borne out when a brilliant bolt of energy seared from one of the fish boy's guns and stabbed straight through a wall to incinerate a Humi crouching behind it. Uftak chortled. You couldn't win a Dakar war with fish boys. You had to take the hits to get in close, then let them have it.
They don't like it when you hit them in the face, as Baggit Snazhammer had said once, and Uftak had seen the truth of that several times.
Thinking of Badgit reminded him that he didn't have a weapon. He closed his hand experimentally and felt the button depress, but the snazhammer failed to materialise anywhere remotely near him. De Boffin had said there was a range limit on the teleporter, but that it should work within any distance Uftak was capable of throwing it. The spikies had obviously taken him rather further than a hammer throw away from his lads. Two objects blurred down at him from the sky, and he threw one arm up to shield his face and drew the other back ready to lash out, but the flying things stopped just short of punching range. When they didn't start shooting, Uftak lowered his arm a bit and studied them. They were strange, except they were spiky things, so strange was sort of expected. They appeared to be giant, independent lenses, kept aloft by one or more of the myriad blinking lights and protrusions on the frames that surrounded them. They bobbed loosely in the air, buffeted by air currents from distant explosions or swirled up by the overhead races. But the lenses themselves remained steadily fixed on him.
"This place," Uftak said firmly, "just gets weirder and weirder."
The air flickered somewhere in what was presumably the arena's middle, not that Uftak could really see the other side, given the variations of terrain and ongoing battles that were in the way, and a truly massive spiky appeared. It was taller than a gargant, but Uftak could see the haziness and rough edges that made it clear it was a projection rather than the real thing. Just as well, even he would have struggled to fight a spiky that big. The spiky began to speak in their silly, fluid language. Uftak waited a couple of seconds to make sure he hadn't suddenly learned how to understand it, then was going to go back to looking for a weapon when two things happened in quick succession. Firstly, he recognised another spiky, just in shot behind the one that was on its feet and speaking. It was the boss from the dungeon, the boss he'd fought before. He was looking very displeased, and Uftak grinned as he realised what must have happened. That boss had wanted him to stay trapped, but this boss had decided it wanted him to fight in the arena after all.
Well, that was entertaining.
Secondly, two images of himself appeared in front of the speaking spiky. He was rather smaller and being looked down on. The spikies were seeing him as the flying lenses were seeing him. The speaking spiky gestured to him with a sneer, and the crowd erupted into raucous jeers and bellows. Uftak shrugged. He couldn't care less what spikies thought about him. It looked like he was being given the opportunity to fight, which suited him, and he didn't care if it also suited them. Perhaps he'd find a way to turn the tables on an entire arena full of spikies. If not, he'd have a good scrap on the way. What more could he ask for? The ground a little way in front of him started to shake, and then a cage erupted from the arena's dirt floor. There was a moment's dramatic pause, and then the front dropped open. A large shape emerged, twisting itself to get its overlarge shoulders through the doorway. The multiple dim lights from above glinted off familiar armour, made from the same substance that still decorated much of Uftak's torso. Uftak's face broke into a broad grin. They'd given him his very own beaky to play with. Chapter 22. The beaky, Uftak noted, didn't seem particularly pleased to be there. That was a bit odd, since beakies were the most orc-like of all humies. They didn't tend to run away from a good scrap, and kept fighting even after they'd taken a proper kicking, so you'd have thought that this sort of place would be great for one of them. However, beakies also hated anything that wasn't a humie, and rather than enjoying a fight because it meant they could kill some non-humies, they sometimes appeared to resent the fact there were even non-humies for them to fight in the first place. There was an underlying current of bitterness that seemed to suck out a lot of the joy that should have been there. It was all rather confusing. Uftak didn't actually hate anyone or anything, not really. Well, there were plenty of things he didn't like that much in the galaxy, and which he thought were weird or odd or annoying, but he could fight most of them, so they weren't that bad. Beakies, though, they had a hatred that burned. Still, Uftak wasn't the one who'd put the beaky here, whereas presumably the spikies had, much like they had with Uftak. Beakies were capable fighters. Perhaps this bum would be willing to listen to reason.
"Oi, beaky!"
Uftak yelled in the humie tongue, pointing at the crowd behind him.
"Wanna scrag these kids?"
The beaky, armoured in dark blue apart from its gauntlets, which were a vivid crimson, didn't answer. It just reached into the cage from which it had just emerged, pulled out a chain chopper, ignited the motor with a flick of a switch, and charged at Uftak with a bellow. Oh well. Uftak hadn't faced a beaky since he'd become a knob, let alone since the growth spurt he'd experienced after becoming Big Boss. He remembered them as orc-sized or larger, swift and deadly and encased in armour that was nigh impossible to crack. You needed a rocket launcher or a power claw to really get at them, or to hold one down and a bunch of the lads to give it a going over with their choppers until someone found a gap or a weakness. That was then, however, and orc-sized was a poor descriptor given the size of orcs was far more variable than that of humies. Uftak waited until the beaky came into range, then lashed out with a punch. Humies had short arms anyway compared to orcs, although their legs were somewhat longer. Uftak's fist thudded into the beaky's chest before its chain chopper could even reach his torso, and although his knuckles smarted a bit immediately afterwards, beakies were nowhere near as solid as he remembered. The overgrown humie staggered back and sat down in the dirt of the arena floor with a startled expression on its face and pieces of splintered decoration dropping off its breastplate.
"You got any mates with you?"
Uftak asked, shaking his hand out.
something to make this a bit more interesting.
This was apparently the wrong thing to say, judging by the way the beaky leapt back to its feet and flew at him again. Rage made for an excellent motivator, it seemed, and Uftak had to step back and swat the chain chopper away a couple of times as the beaky tried its best to bury the whirring teeth of its weapon into his flesh. Within a few seconds, however, it became clear that no matter how angry the beaky was, it wasn't going to be able to be more than an irritant to him. Somewhat disappointingly, Uftak found that he was simply too big and too quick for a regular beaky to give him any trouble. He could have killed it easily enough, taken the chopper off it and pulled its limbs off one by one, maybe even beaten it to death with its own leg. But while the beaky hadn't seemed interested in helping him spoil their captor's party, what if he didn't give it a choice in the matter? Uftak caught the beaky's chopper arm in his hand and began to spin. He whirled around three times on the spot, dragging the beaky around with him, then let out a massive grunt of effort and heaved the beaky high into the air. His aim was true. To be honest, Uftak had been considering the whole thing a win-win scenario. If he hadn't made the throw, then the beaky would have flown headfirst into the wall that formed the arena's edge, which would have just been funny. But it sailed upwards, thrashing as it went, and easily cleared it. Then it came down amidst the crowd of startled spikies. One thing you could say about beakies was that they were always ready for a fight. Now denied the opportunity of carving chunks out of Uftak, the beaky clearly decided that it was going to make the best of a bad job and began laying about it with its weapon. Spikey scrambled to get away from the raging armoured killer newly arrived in their midst, but even their lightning-fast reflexes and general agility were of limited use when they were hemmed in on all sides by others of their kind, many of whom had been seated and some of whom were too caught up in the secondary entertainments offered by chemical stimulants, or each other, to immediately realise what was going on. Spiky warriors, when appropriately armed and armoured, could certainly give a beaky a good fight. These weren't warriors, however, but indolent spectators with only a knife or three about their persons and no great desire to buy time for their fellows by sacrificing their own lives. Uftak watched the bloodshed for a few moments, then turned away with a laugh. Spikies. They started an awful lot of fights with an awful lot of enemies for a species that feared their own death so much. The flying lenses closed in on him again, although they remained out of his reach. That was the cue for the giant projection of the spiky boss to reappear, towering above the arena. It wasn't smiling any longer, which amused Uftak no end. He made the rudest hand signal he could in its general direction, and although he suspected that the watching crowd didn't know the gesture's exact meaning, the general intake of breath and change in tone of the noise around him suggested they had at least gleaned an idea of it. The spiky spoke once more, its voice amplified until it rolled around like thunder or distant explosions. Then it made a chopping gesture with its hand, and its image blinked out again. Uftak looked around expectantly. He doubted he was going to get rewarded for his creative disposal of the beaky, so presumably another and more dangerous opponent was on the way, which, to be fair, was not that far off from a reward anyway. He'd be satisfied as long as he wasn't about to get vaporised by one of their dark-like guns, although if that was the only way the spikies thought they could kill him, then he'd still consider it as kind of a compliment. Sure enough, the familiar whine of spiky lifter engines swelled overhead. There were four of the small bike types, but they weren't moving to attack. Instead, they had a large crate slung beneath them, suspended on tethers. Uftak eyed them, wondering if he could get aboard one when they landed, and if so, whether it would have enough power to lift him, since he probably weighed 10 times as much as your average spiky now. But it seemed that the gits were ahead of him on that one. They came to a simultaneous halt with the crate still some way off the ground and disengaged the tethers at the same time, sending the crate plummeting, then sped away before it even hit the ground. The crate looked sturdy enough, but it was presumably rigged to come apart on landing, since that was what happened as soon as it hit the ground. Uftak squinted through the dust raised by the impact, trying to work out what was inside. There was a huge, dark shape in there, but something bellowed, and Uftak stiffened in surprise. He knew that voice, but that wasn't possible. The crate's occupant lumbered out of the dust cloud and beat its chest, roaring with primal ferocity. Uftak's blood, which had been fired up at the prospect of another fight, chilled in his veins. It felt as if the bottom had fallen out of his stomach. The creature he faced was his size, possibly even larger, but whereas Uftak still had typically orky proportions, the same could not be said of this monstrosity. It was grotesquely swollen, with ampoules dug into its flesh and glistening auto-injectors visible all over its frame. Its right arm was disproportionately long. Its left shoulder was higher than the right and had a third arm attached beneath it, growing out of its ribcage and surrounded by slabs of grafted muscle. The skin of its back was stretched tight by the lumpy protrusions of a malformed spine, but it still moved with a fearsome simian speed and strength. It was typical of the work of the spiky pain boys, from what Uftak had seen. Brute forcing a body to go far beyond what natural biology had ever intended, and including their own deranged alterations into the mix. However, that was not what was horrific about it. The thing that truly set Uftak's teeth on edge was the fact that the thing's skin was the same deep green as his own, and the tiny face almost buried between the massively enlarged shoulders was one he knew.
"Defro," Uftak breathed. "What a soggy neck."
It was Defro. There was no doubt about it. His right arm no longer terminated in a power claw, but in a forearm and hand that had presumably been taken from another orc and grafted on before he had been subjected to whatever had caused this massive, unnatural growth. But those were definitely his features. Uftak searched his former underling's face, looking for a sign of recognition, but he found none. Defro's pupils were pinpoints that moved wildly, as though he was massively overstimulated. Then they fixed on Uftak, and he charged. There was no warning, no swearing or accusation of poor leadership or even a simple wah. The roar that emanated from Defro's mouth lacked even that level of sophistication. It was an animalistic scream and nothing more. Uftak had the barest second to set himself, and then Defro was on him. Many of the galaxy species might have been taken aback by the assault of one of their own, especially one so horrifically altered. Uftak was disgusted by what had been done to his fellow orc, but fighting other orcs was something he had done many times before, so that in itself was no problem for him to get his head around. The problem came more from the fact that Defro now had three hands, whereas he had only two.
"Get a sogging grip," Uftak roared, blocking two punches but taking the third in the ribs. "Oh, what's the big idea? Spikey's got into your head."
He landed a solid left hand on Defro's jaw to little effect, and then Defro grabbed Uftak's wrists with two of his hands and drew the third one back before landing his fist squarely between Uftak's eyes.
"Oh!"
Uftak bellowed as stars erupted in his vision. He spat out a tooth, but his eyes refocused on Defro's upper left fist drawing back for a second go, and he knew he didn't want to taste another. This time, when Defro punched, Uftak managed to sway his head to one side, then twisted it around and clamped his jaws shut on the other orc's forearm. Defro roared in pain and pulled his arm back. At least he could still feel pain. For a moment, Uftak had been worried that the spikies would have pumped him full of some sort of drug to prevent it, but of course the Gits wanted the maximum amount of suffering on both sides. Uftak had no intention of giving up his brief advantage, so he threw his entire body forward into an enormous headbutt that saw his forehead hit dead centre on Defro's face. The lack of appreciable neck also meant Death Row's body no longer had any way to cushion such a blow, and even his newly massive frame was going to struggle to operate when what was left of the brain controlling it had taken such a hit. Uftak was a bit wobbly himself, but he had enough wherewithal to wrench his arms free of Death Row's loosening grip and to bury one foot in the other orc's gut. It felt like kicking a gargant's side, but it caused Death Row to stagger a step sideways. Uftak moved with him, staying closer to the one arm than the two, and lashed out with another punch that sent Death Row reeling again. He looked around hastily, searching for a weapon, but to no avail. The Spikies had obviously intended for them to beat each other to death with their bare hands. Death Row certainly appeared willing to oblige. He lunged for Uftak with his right hand outstretched, looking to hold him in place while his two left fists got busy on the pummeling. Uftak twisted, grabbing the grasping hand by the wrist and shoving his hip into Death Row's oncoming body, then wrenching forwards and downwards. Death Row's feet left the ground, and his massive body described an ungainly arc through the air before landing in the dirt with an impact that felt like a bomb had gone off. Uftak didn't waste any time. There was no sign of the orc he knew any longer, in terms of what might charitably have been referred to as intellect. Whatever the Spikies had done to Death Row after they'd snagged him, presumably at the same time as they grabbed Uftak, it hadn't been limited to bulking him up. He was properly gone now, as mindlessly killy as any bug eye, and there was only one way to deal with that. Whatever dubious benefits the Spikies' interventions had granted Death Row, his malformed frame did not lend itself to getting back up off the ground very easily once it was down there. Death Row had one moment to thrash, to little success, before Uftak began pounding away on the other orc's face, his left hand on Death Row's right shoulder and one knee on his gut. Orc skulls were notoriously thick and resilient, capable of withstanding an astonishing amount of blunt force without sustaining damage that a pain boy couldn't fix given a few metal plates and a bit of glue. But Uftak was a lot bigger than he used to be, and he hit a lot harder. Also, he was angry. The first punch landed flush. Death Row half blocked the second with his upper left arm, but his lower one had already gone limp. If Uftak had been thinking about it, he might have surmised that the newly grafted limb was not as easy to control if there was any disruption to the nervous system, but he was more concerned with finishing the job. The third punch slipped past Death Row's defences and struck home again. The other orc's eyes rolled back in his head for a moment, and now none of his body